Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. It may be a different time wherever you are. We record these events, so who knows what time you're watching it, when you're watching it, but I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you're tuning in. I'm glad you're watching. Maybe you've downloaded this to you're listening to it on your phone while you work out, mowing the lawn. Who knows? Maybe you're sitting at work. All good. Glad you're here. I'm Malcolm. I'm going to be your host today. I'm the host all the time. Not just today. If you are listening to the CDO Matters podcast, or if you're watching us, you get me every time. I've yet to actually have anybody else like host on my behalf. I think this is episode like 78 or 79. We're 3 years in to this podcast and we've never had anybody else do it. And fun fact, we have yet to miss, we publish every 2 weeks and we've yet to miss a 2 week publish window in 3 years of doing this, which is like, if I had a machine I could press like to make the background noise, like the yay, like Jim Cramer with the buttons and the sell. I would have pushed the button that is like celebrate. That's really a testament to the amazing team that I have behind me. Shout out to Manasia. Shout out to Ivan. Shout out to everybody who helps put this podcast together. Danielle, Haley, Kayla's helped in the past. Alexis helped in the past. We've got a team. It's not just me. I am like the Vanna White of the CDO Matters community and the CDO Matters podcast. I just turn the letters. I show up. I'm the spokesmodel. We can have an interesting conversation about the, whether I'm an attractive spokesmodel or not, but that's irrelevant. I am the spokesmodel, and I am literally walking on the backs of others that help make my job a lot easier. So, boy, I'm having a hard time speaking. It's Friday afternoon here on the East Coast of Florida. It's early May, kind of crazy. I think we'll publish this podcast as soon as we can, more than likely in a couple of weeks or in 3 weeks, because the issue that we're going to talk about today is timely. The issue today is data and tariffs. More specifically, what should CDOs be doing? Maybe arguably, what should they have already been doing? But let's put that aside. There's a lot of turmoil right now. There's a lot of uncertainty. And I've got some advice for CDOs or VPs of data and analytics or directors of data and analytics or anybody in a data and analytics role who has influence over short-term priorities and short-term roadmaps and what you should be doing in order to buttress yourself against the uncertainty that is today's days and time. So we're going to talk about what can we do? Are there things that we can be doing in a data role to help our companies better cope with a lot of the turmoil that's going on right now? I'm not here to talk about whether I agree or disagree. That doesn't matter. I'm here to help CDOs and other data leaders succeed in their roles. And the good news or bad news, I think it's mostly generally bad news, but when it comes to situations like this, we don't have to look too far back to look for guidance on what we should or shouldn't be doing in times like this. I just think of early 2020. Wow, it's crazy to think that was 5 years ago with the global pandemic. But I think back to early 2020, all through the year of 2020, and it is just eerily reminiscent of what I'm seeing now. Things were rapidly changing. There was a big shock, a big disruption, particularly to global supply chains. Everything just pretty much stopped. Shipping stopped. Manufacturing stopped. Everything stopped. If you're more than, 15 years old, you'll remember. Everything just kind of ground to a halt. So we have a playbook here. But what I saw in 2020, folks, was a lot of waiting and seeing, a lot of sitting on hands. And a lot of, we're not entirely sure what's going to happen. Let's just wait this out. Things will probably sort themselves out sooner rather than later. And a lot of people stood on the sidelines. A lot of people ended up, and a lot of companies and a lot of data leaders, it did end up acting eventually. They started to act based on the conversations I was having while a Gartner analyst. And that's a pretty good bellwether to me. That is a pretty good indicator of, you know, CDO and data leader sentiment. Early 2020, there was a lot of just apprehension. By late 2020, it became clear that things were probably settling in for a while, and this there was a new normal, and that we would need to react and take some actions to try to combat the negative impacts of the global pandemic. And I certainly saw that while I was a Gartner analyst, but there was a good 6 month span there, maybe even more for a lot of companies, where there wasn't anything happening and they weren't doing anything for the exact same reasons as now. Now, don't get me wrong. Some of the things I'm going to recommend and some of the things that I think that we should be doing as data leaders are will cost money. And I do understand that there's a lot of apprehension right now. And there's a lot of companies saying, time out, stop spending, stop investment, stop everything. Let's just wait and see. But if you are in a senior leadership position at any organization and you suffer from some of the things that I'm about to talk about today, I would strongly urge you to go make a business case to your leaders that you should be taking action. Because frankly, if you didn't do some of the things that I'm about to talk about today in 2020, you know, when looking back, you will honestly be able to self-assess and say, sheesh, we should have done something. Right? We had the opportunity in 2020. We should have done something. We didn't do anything. Those companies that didn't, by the way, that didn't do anything in 2020, 2021, 2022, suffered far, far more than companies that did. There are a non-trivial number of companies that were taking some pretty significant actions in 2020, 2021, 2022, that we're still seeing the impacts of those today. Whether those are good or bad, we can have an argument about that, but a company like Nike, that it was in the middle of the pandemic, made a pivot away from B2C sales or B2B sales and pivoted towards B2C sales. Nike's been in the news recently. Some of their performance is down, but that was still a significant pivot. That was still a significant shift. And in the time of the pandemic, that was a huge difference. McDonald's was already in the middle of a shift towards automation. This was happening 2020, 2021. The pandemic just accelerated a lot of that. And a lot of those efforts continue to this day. There are many other examples where companies were adjusting to the new normal of the pandemic. And we're still seeing some of that new normal now. My point here, folks, is that It's never too late to act, particularly on the things that I'm going to talk about today. It's not too late to act. And if history is any guide, then the longer we sit on our hands on these things, the more deleterious the impacts are going to be. I don't know how long this tariff thing is going to last for. I don't know how long the disruptions are going to be. I honestly don't have a magic forward-looking hat, or else I'd be wearing it right now. So I don't know how long they're going to last, but the things I'm going to share with you, I would argue, my friends, are evergreen that we should be doing. We'll get into some of the action steps here in a minute. So time, I would argue, is most certainly of the essence. Time is of the essence. If you didn't do these things in the pandemic, you need to do them now. And if you didn't do them in the pandemic and you hadn't done them before, this is what I'm going to share with you today is just like good nutrition. Right? Exercising more, eating well, getting enough sleep. The things I will share with you are basics. Well, maybe they're hard to do. Don't get me wrong. That's why a lot of companies avoid them and haven't figured this stuff out. But they're going to benefit you. They're going to benefit you when times are good. They're going to benefit you when times are tough. They're just going to benefit you because they are data nutrition, data management nutrition, perhaps. So what I will share is not it only works now. And it's only worth, you know, it's only useful now. And then when things go back to normal, it's no good anymore. No, these are evergreen, best of breed practices, best practices that we should be doing as data and analytics leaders. So timing of the essence, get on it. It's never a good time for these types of disruptions. However, there is, again, There's a precedence here. And my hope is that what I will share with you today motivates some data leaders to go to their senior leadership, to go to their board, to go to their C-suite to say, you know what? We need to do this. And we know that times are tough. We know that things are extremely uncertain. But here's the reality. What we saw in COVID is that companies that got their data house in order prospered, or at the very least were not excessively impacted, right? When people got their data house in order, good things happened. And when companies sat on their hands, bad things happened, right? There were absolutely feedback effects here. There were exponential impacts. Better you were, the better you got, and on, the worse off you were, the worse off you got. So that's the teaser for our discussion today. What don't you have time for? So what are the things you should be avoiding right now? What did we learn from the pandemic that is probably not that, you know, tactics that are probably not that helpful right now? Well, if time is of the essence, and I would argue it most certainly is, then a few things to think about. Pardon me, friends. I've got a tickle in the back of my throat. Allergy season. C'est la vie. So you don't have time. What don't you have time for? Well, here's going to be something a little heretical. Governance committees, decision-making by committee. Don't really have time for that. I know that sounds heretical, and I know that is contrary to pretty much every best practice when it comes to data governance. Data governance best practices would say, hey, you know, if you're going to be doing things with your customer data, your supplier data, your product data, you're going to be making some decisions that impact your analytics. You're going to be making investments in these things. Well, then you need to run that before your data governance committee. Well, this is going to sound heretical. In this situation, my friends, in this situation, I would rather seek approval later. I would rather seek, I'd apologize later, but have a bias for action now. The time for action is now. There should be and needs to be, necessarily must be, a bias for action. And I am all for governance, huge believer in governance, but you don't have time to defer some of these decisions to the committee. You just don't. When you start talking about things like customer definitions, you start talking about things like supplier definitions, you start talking things about, like, you know, financial reporting, contract level reporting, you start talking about some of these things in the committee. We need our data governance committees, but right now time is of the essence and we don't have time for a lot of these things. If you disagree, I would love, you know, hey, put a comment in. If you're watching this on LinkedIn, if you're watching this on YouTube, put a comment below and say, hey, you're crazy. That's not right. That's not cool. It's not good. But I would argue you really don't have time to go before committee. Now, that doesn't mean you don't need to have your customers engaged. On the contrary, you do need to have your customers engaged. So one of the things I'm going to recommend is that you take a very use case specific approach here. You take a use case driven approach to solving for some of the problems we're going to talk about. That necessarily requires you to engage your customers and to have them working hand in hand with you. Pardon me. Oh my goodness. Pardon me. I told you, allergy season. When the throat starts tickling, it's like, oh, here it comes. So, forgive me for sneezing in the microphone. Hopefully it wasn't 18 times the volume and you're listening with earbuds and you get to hear me sneezing. Governance committees, don't really have time for that. You don't have time for fancy governance either. You know, I'm a huge believer in adaptive forms of governance. I am a huge believer in taking a content-centric approach to governance. I'm a huge believer in having a very flexible governance model where you apply this set of governance policies to this use case and this set of governance policies to this use case. I'm going to recommend exactly that. But again, we don't have time to run this before committees because these are very complicated models. These are very advanced forms of governance that, and if you try to do this, and you try to get maybe ahead of your skis on governance at a time when speed is absolutely paramount, and when speed is of the essence, again, we're going to be taking an MVP approach here. I would argue perhaps even not even an MVP, because an MVP necessarily, when you're talking about some of these things in normal days and times, would require a lot of buy-in and consensus and kumbaya. Don't really have time for that. I would argue we really don't have a ton of time for long drawn out consulting engagements either. To think that you are going to go hire particularly strategic consulting. Now, there are roles for consultants to play in more of a staff augmentation perspective, butts and seats type perspective. And if there are roles in your team that you are missing, or if you believe that there are roles that need to be sourced in order to do some of the things that I'm talking about, hey, great. That's fantastic. But going in doing this 6 to 9 month BCG engagement, Deloitte, McKinsey, Accenture, whatever, these are wonderful companies. Don't get me wrong. They provide great insight. But if you have to wait 6, 7, 8, 9 months for a recommendation, that's probably going to take a year to implement. Well, who the heck knows what's in 2 years? We don't have 2 years to wait, my friends. We don't have 2 years to wait. Your companies are already feeling the impacts of these tariffs. You already are. The time for action was yesterday. And the time before that was the day before yesterday. So the idea that we're going to go and get into this consulting engagement to help come up with a recommendation in order to deal with tariffs, forget about it. I'm here to help, right? And I'm you know, I'm free. People used to pay a lot of money for my insights when I was a gardener. But there are resources out there to help you move quickly on some of this stuff. There are some consultants, a limited number of consultants. You know, they tend to be kind of, you know, individual proprietors who are extremely talented experts in their given field who can help, who certainly can help. So I'm not saying just avoid all consultants, but I am saying, you know, the classic, hey, we'll come and you know, do the as-is evaluation. As a part of the as-is, we'll do a maturity assessment, and then we'll come up with our roadmap, and we'll come up with our priorities, and we'll... We don't have time for that. Don't have time for it. As valuable as those things may be, we don't have time for it. Speaking of data strategy, if you're out there, if you're reasonably new CDO, and many of you are, more than 55% of you are your company's first CDO, and many of you are in the job for the first time within the last 18 months. If you're one of these CDOs and you're saying to yourself, okay, well, I got to figure out my strategy before I can figure out how to make sure that we protect ourselves from these tariffs. Nope, don't have time for that either. I would argue this is kind of a DEFCON 5 or DEFCON 1. 5 alarm fire. This is a 5 alarm fire that requires action right now. And again, the things that I'm going to recommend are evergreen. All the things that I'm going to recommend to you today are best practices that should be happening Monday to Friday, every day, every month. They should be just kind of baked in to everything that you do. So the things that I'm going to recommend today will necessarily and should necessarily be part of your data strategy. So this idea, okay, well, I've got to go figure out my strategy first before I make an investment to try to make sure that we're best positioned to weather the storm for these tariffs. Don't bother. I mean, you should be working on your strategy in parallel, right? If you're reasonably new to the role, you should be working on the strategy. But if you listen to any of my advice and any of my other podcasts or anything that I post online, while you're doing that, you need to be doing stuff in the short term to drive value now. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what is the short term or what are you doing to drive value now? I would argue that if you suffer from the things that I'm about to talk to you, you should be figuring these things out now. That is the short term, that your short term should be figuring out all of this now, including figure this stuff out that I'm going to talk about in advance of AI, in advance of data products, in advance of anything else. Keep that in mind. Data cleanup. So you don't have time for data cleanup. Your data is a mess. Figure out a way around it. Figure out a way around the messy data. You don't have time for perfection. Don't have time for that. What you're going to be going for here is 60, 70, 80% of a solution, and that should be good enough. And it's not that it should be good enough. It's what you're going to be able to do in the short term. And it will necessarily drive incremental value. Now, is it going to drive as much value as it could if your data quality was better? Of course. I mean, if your data quality is better, you'd get more value, but you don't have time for that. You don't have time for business process changes. You don't have time to fix the fact that you've got data silos per se, right? You don't have time to fix all the operational problems that got us to where we are, right? So we don't have time with that. We don't have time. We don't have time to go and sit and try to convince our customers in the business that they need to change how they onboard customers, or how they onboard suppliers, or how they do apply due diligence to anybody. We don't have time for that. We need to be doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down, and some of the basics we're going to talk about. So what are these elusive advices? What are the things that I keep referring to but not speaking of? Well, I think it's pretty simple. In my experience as a Gartner analyst, in my experience as a CDO, in my experience in the data and analytics world, most suffer from data silos. Okay? It's just a reality. You've got data in CRM, you've got data in ERP, you've got data in a supply chain system, you've got data in a HR system, you've got data on an Excel spreadsheet, you've got data written on your hand. You got a silo. You got data silos. What you need to be doing at a high level right now, if you haven't done this before, you need to be doing it now. You need to find a way to break those silos, to come up with holistic analytics to show you the total, or as close to the total as possible, as much of the data possible for a given relationship that you have that is critical to your business. What do I mean? Well, customer relationships, supplier relationships. You need as much insight related to your core materials, your core products as possible. If you've got product data in silos, you need to have a holistic view of that product data. If you've got supplier data in silos, you need to find a holistic way to have a holistic view of that supplier data. Customer data, same thing. If you've got customer data all over the place and it takes you 2 weeks to run a consolidated customer report, then you need to fix that. And you need to get as close as you can, I will say, dare I say, to a 360. This is still a used term. It's still a valuable term. People generally know what you say when you say a customer 360 or supplier 360. So yes, it's a little bit of an overused term. Yes, it's a little pithy, but hopefully you get my point. If your CEO asks you, how much are we buying from Acme Incorporated? Okay. And let's assume Acme is one of your core suppliers. Acme sells you the stuff that you need to make your goods, right? If your CEO asks, how much business are we doing with Acme Incorporated? How much risk? Because we know that Acme is based in China. How much risk do we have with Acme Incorporated? If it takes you a long time to answer that question, what do I mean by long? Anything other than pressing a button or running a report. If it takes you 2 or 3 days to cobble that data together, if it takes you 2 to 3 weeks to cobble that data together in an accurate, consistent, trustworthy way, this is what I'm talking about. What you need to be focused on right now, I would argue, if you are concerned about tariffs, if you have exposure to tariffs, I would argue we all do. Whether that is direct or indirect, we all do. We all do, right? If tariffs negatively impact the economy for a prolonged period, right? The hope here, of course, is that manufacturing is spurred in the United States and that local sources get to the point where you can easily switch between. I think it's obvious that that's going to take some time, right? Manufacturing plants just don't spring up overnight, right? So this is going to take some time and everybody will be impacted, because even if you're not creating stuff, even if you're not manufacturing goods, or if you're not wholesaling or distributing or reselling goods from China, this is most, or any other country for that way. It doesn't matter if it's China. It could be Canada. You could be getting stuff from Canada. You could be getting softwoods from Canada or steel from Canada. It doesn't matter. If you're getting your goods from anywhere else, right, and you can't get them and your prices go up, well, your demand is going to go down. If your demand goes down, there could necessarily be a drag on the entire economy on a industry or economy-wide basis. So there's many people out there talking about potentially a recession that is triggered by these tariffs, I don't know whether that's true or whether it's not true. My point here, my friends, is that I think every company will be exposed and will be impacted. The question is, how much will they be impacted? I don't think we necessarily know. But again, returning to the high-level advice, is if you cannot quickly and easily and consistently, repetitively produce what I would just loosely call 360 insights related to your core master data objects, supplier, product, customer, material, maybe even location. If you cannot do that quickly, if you cannot do that confidently, if you cannot do that accurately, these are the things that we need to be focused on in the short term. Your leadership needs these 360 insights to understand how much is our business exposed from the demand perspective, right? How much should we expect that our consumer demand will go down? Who are our customers? How often do they buy? What do they buy? When did they buy? What products did they buy? Do they prefer the products that are going to be impacted by these tariffs, or do they prefer something else? You need to understand who your customers are, the nature of your, the full nature of your relationship with your customers, right? You need to understand that. Demand side, supply side. You need to understand the complete picture of everything that you're doing on the supply side of your business. If you depend on importing goods from somewhere else, if you depend on raw materials from other places, you need to understand your product lifecycle. You need to understand where those goods come from. You need to understand, are there suitable goods that we could be using otherwise? Are there alternatives? Are there substitutes here? And on and on. These are all, everything that I just talked about are all predicated on the idea, the assumption, the belief that you have a consistent and accurate and holistic 360 degree view of those things that matter the most. Your shared master data assets, supplier, customer, product, location, material, ingredient. If it takes you a long time to run reports, if you don't trust those reports, because largely because you have data silos, and we all do, then those are the things that you need to be focused on. You absolutely need to be solving for that. And I would recommend, my friends, that it's do not embark what I was talking about before. I was talking about perfection. Forget perfection. You're not going to achieve perfection. Can you get to 60, 70, 80% of that 360 degree view? Not going to be perfect. Can you do it? Can you do it? Can you provide a better report to your chief procurement officer about your exposure to Acme Incorporated from a supplier perspective? Can you produce a better version of that report that shows how all of your products are being consumed across your various geographical regions or across various product lines, you name it, right? How do we improve that, and how do we improve that quickly? I would argue, my friends, that if we take a very MVP-driven, very time-sensitive, bias-to-action approach to solving for some of these problems, we can make meaningful improvements in weeks and not months or years. What are some of the tactics to help accelerate these initiatives? Well, you know, obviously not all data is created equally, right? But let's start first with third-party data. So if you are talking about your customer, whether that is a B2B customer, whether that's a B2C customer, if you are talking about your suppliers slash vendors, you know, again, doesn't matter what industry you are, if you are dependent on other businesses and you're trying to understand how much business are we doing with Acme, less so from the perspective of products, maybe if you are dependent on reference data, maybe you've got reference data all over the place. Can you turn to third-party providers of data to help you create reference data sets for those key shared master data assets? What am I talking about? Well, as a part of this journey, understanding how much business you're doing with Acme Incorporated, you need to establish what is accurate from the perspective of Acme, right? A great way, instead of going to a governance committee and saying, what are the rules for how I define what Acme is? What are the rules for defining when the data related to Acme is correct or incorrect, right? How do you even get into simple things like defining what is a company or what is a customer? Instead of falling down those rabbit holes and trying to answer those questions on your own, can you defer to third-party providers of industry standard data that say, this is what a company is, and here's the correct information for Acme Incorporated. Or maybe even necessarily on the consumer side, buying data from one of these, a large agency or a large data provider, like an Axiom or an Epsilon or others, to help you understand who are you doing business with? How many unique customers are you actually doing business with? Third-party data providers can drastically accelerate some of the governance decisions you need to make quickly. You've probably heard me say this on this podcast before, but I've literally lost days of my life sitting in workrooms arguing about customer definitions. You don't have time for that. Or company definitions. You don't have time for that either. This is why it can be valuable to partner with some of these third-party data providers, because at the very least, for better or worse, for example, an Experian or a Dun & Bradstreet or a Hart Hanks or an InfoUSA or ZoomInfo even, when it comes to people, they're not going to be perfect. Their data is not going to be perfect. Is it 90% accurate? Is it 80% accurate? I mean, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It's still at least a standard that you're able to apply your data to, and you're able to actually kind of defend it. Because you put a report in front of your C-suite and says, okay, here's how much business we're doing at Acme Incorporated. They'll go, oh, well, okay, that information from Acme, where did you get that? Right? How are you confident that this is how much we're doing? Well, we're using an industry standard like a Dun & Bradstreet. We use the Dun's number as the key for matching, right? So instead of taking days and days and days and days to try to get to consensus internally on how to define a company and whether that and the rules related to defining whether that company is a going concern, you can use a third-party data provider. Will significantly help accelerate those efforts. Technology. Yes, of course, I work for an MDM provider. I am biased here, but I think MDM technology can go a long way in the short term to help you do these things. It can help match at scale. It can help you do some data stewardship at scale. It can help you understand and manage hierarchies at scale. Hierarchy management is a big part of all of this, folks. This is another area where those third-party data providers can significantly help. You may think that you're not doing business with China because you are working with ABC Inc. Maybe ABC Incorporated is just some holding company based overseas somewhere, not China, but based overseas somewhere. Maybe they're just a holding company, right? And all of their operating units just happen to be in China, but you didn't know that because you didn't know all the operating units of ABC Incorporated. Having that depth of insight related to these from these hierarchies is so, so important. They're so important because they're going to show you where there are second and third degree risks related to the business you may be doing with Acme. We saw this in COVID, friends. We saw this where there are plenty of people that didn't think they had any supply chain exposure, any supply chain risk. Lo and behold, what happened is that they were doing business with one company. They thought they were doing business with one company. Turns out they were doing business with 15 companies because company A was dependent on all of these other companies. The interconnectedness, the interdependencies within our global supply chain are very, very real, and starting to build out and manage these hierarchies and understand relationships between corporate entities. A good starting point is legal relationships between them, things like owner and subsidiary or franchisee. Understanding some of those legal relationships is a good first step. Second, third step, as you progress in your maturity here, will be to understand some of those operating interdependencies that may not be abundantly obvious, where there are operating agreements or trade agreements that you didn't necessarily know about. But again, using third-party data, focusing on some idea of master data management, probably through the use of a tool, probably through the use of software. Is that going to align to this get her done quick? Some better than others. Some better than others. You know, if you're thinking about, 9 to 12 months to implement MDM, you don't have that time. You need to be working with a provider that's going to be able to help you be up and running in days and doing some matching in days, maybe a couple of weeks, tops, where you can start throwing some data into, taking data out of your CRM and your ERP and your procurement system, dropping it into an MDM and doing some basic matching, using some basic matching rules to see, okay, how often is Acme Incorporated showing up across these three sources of data? Because we need to understand our relationship with Acme Incorporated, whether Acme is a supplier or a customer. Same thing is true from a product perspective. You need to understand your products. Where are materials being used across your products? Do you even have that visibility today? Maybe you're a global multinational and you are building products all over the world and operating units across the globe. Can you start to produce some of those insights where you can see, aha, we're building something in Canada that is highly dependent on tariffs, but we're building something over here that is not. Could we start trading some things internally necessarily within organizations? So you get my point. Hopefully you get my point. Master data management here is all about busting silos. My recommendation to you in the short term is to find ways to bust silos. If you didn't do it during COVID to come up with these 360 degrees of views of something, you need to do it now. Because again, this is evergreen. This is evergreen, friends. This isn't going away. Nobody is going to argue. If you make an investment right now to come up with a single view of your relationship with Acme Incorporated, nobody is going to argue that's a bad thing. Nobody. These things arguably should have been happening 5 years ago. If they weren't, you need to get them done now. And again, perfection is the enemy of progress on this stuff. It most certainly is. Now, I've mentioned MDM as a discipline, master data management, and in technology as well. There's a lot of people that incorrectly assume that MDM necessarily is this 2-3 year long initiative. It's not. It doesn't have to be. There are two forms of MDM. One is what we call an analytical style, where all you're trying to do is link things together. Acme, Acme Inc., Acme Co., Acme LLC, Acme and Sons. Is that one thing or is that four things? Analytical styles of MDM are answering that question. They will help you answer that question. You'll be able to configure some basic rules for how I define a corporation. This is where a third-party data provider can help you accelerate that. You'll implement some basic rules. You can configure some basic rules and configure some basic data quality standards for what you expect to see on the record for Acme. You'll define some essentials around what are the attributes of Acme that matter the most, right? Maybe, obviously, their location, their address is going to be one of them. Their industry could be another one, revenue, number of employees. Maybe you need to understand what the risk is of Acme going under because of all this. Maybe you don't even know that you're doing a lot of business with extremely small companies that may not be able to weather the storm in the short term, right? If the shipments stop, right, you're dependent on Acme as a manufacturer for your stuff. Is Acme going to be around in 3 months? If Acme is a $40, $50 billion company, and you know that, because of a robust supplier due diligence or supplier onboarding process, if you know these things, okay, well, great. Acme's probably going to be around. They're probably going to be able to weather the storm for the next 3 to 4 months. But if Acme is an extremely small company, and maybe you don't know that, maybe you were sold a bill of goods when you established your supplier relationship with somebody, maybe you made a choice to do business with them because they were the lowest cost provider. It's these types of insights that I'm talking about, my friends. Yes, I'm talking about a 360, but I'm talking about it in a little bit more of a holistic view as well. Again, this is where third-party data can be very, very helpful. Because you don't have to sit and Google who is Acme Incorporated and try to figure out how big Acme is, how long they've been around, what their creditworthiness is. Another great justification to use third-party data to help understand and augment your complete view of Acme Incorporated as a supplier or a customer. These things are absolutely positively necessary. We need to be doing this. Most companies, again, have silos. They have silos. So this is a pervasive problem. Anyway, two forms of MDM. One is that analytical style, where you're just trying to link things together. Two is operational MDM. It's known as operational MDM, where you create a single Goldmaster record for Acme, and then you push it everywhere. You push it into CRM, you push it into procurement, you push it into ERP, and there's one record to rule them all. Well, that's wonderful, and that's a great future state from an MDM perspective. You don't have time for that. You don't have time for it. That's fine. Part of the roadmap. We'll get to it when we get to it. What we're talking about here is building a report that shows your total relationship with Acme Incorporated, or the total number of products that you are selling, or the total number of materials that you are using and where you're using those materials. I keep deferring to supplier or customer because I think, corporate entity, because I think it's a normal one. We all do business with other businesses somehow, some way. Yeah, but product is relevant here. Ingredient/material is relevant here. Even employee is relevant here. But I'm going to keep focusing on corporate entities. So operational MDM sounds great. The single one Goldmaster record sounds great. You don't have time for that. What makes analytical MDM in this use case so powerful is that you don't have to fix your source data. You don't have to. You just need to find a way to link it all together. Once you create that one new master ID that links all of those child IDs together, what do I mean by that? Some new master ID doesn't exist. It will exist, right? When you create this new master ID that links Acme 1, Acme 2, Acme 3, and Acme 4 together. Source ID 1, source ID 2, 3, and 4. Could be your Salesforce ID, could be your Oracle ID, could be your SAP IDs, doesn't matter. All of those things get linked together so that now you can run a report using your BI platform of choice. Doesn't matter, whatever. You can run a report using your BI platform of choice to show you how much business are we doing with Acme Incorporated across all of our lines of business, across all of our domains, across all of our manufacturing locations. That's what we are going for here. And if you can't do that today, or the common thing, this is what I was trying to get to a little bit earlier before I lost my train of thought. The common theme for most companies is that creating these reports is a 2-3 week exercise. Not uncommon. Not uncommon, where you have to manually link all of those versions of Acme together. Maybe this sounds really familiar. Maybe it doesn't sound familiar, but I suspect it does. It was familiar for me. CEO says, hey, I'm going to go golf with the CEO, you know, with my buddy CEO of Acme Incorporated. You know, how much business have we done with Acme over the last 6 months? Uh-oh. What's our balance of trade with Acme? That's even more fun, right? Like, hey, you know, we sell stuff to Acme, but they sell stuff to us, right? Can you tell me as the CEO, can you tell me what that balance of trade is, right? Are we selling more than we're buying, right? Which is kind of the preferred scenario. But like in my past, when those questions were asked to me, it was gulp. That's going to be a couple of weeks. What do you mean it's going to be a couple of weeks? Well, because I've got data all over the place, Acme is all over the place, and I'm not entirely sure that Acme Inc. and Acme LLC are one thing or two things. And I need to go do some really kind of gyrations, some of it human-based, some of it query-based, some of it ETL-based to try to solve for that problem. And I suspect you're there. Most companies are there. So if these are the things that you're suffering from, if you don't have that single view of your customers or suppliers or products or materials, if you don't do it or you can't do it easily, quickly, you can't do it accurately, confidently. If you maybe you can produce the report, but when you look at it, you're like, what? This is what we're seeing right now with a lot of companies that made a rush towards Databricks and Snowflake, right? Everybody's rushing to Databricks, to Snowflake, you know, hey, Data Lake. Lake House, woohoo, let's go. My friend Scott Taylor says, sounds like the Lake House, sounds like where data goes on vacation. Ba-dum-bum. All jokes aside, a lot of companies have been racing towards those analytical infrastructures because they're very powerful. They're very attractive. Hey, I can do all of my analytics workloads. I can do my data science workloads. I can do everything. You know, I can do everything out of Databricks. It's going to solve all my problems. Oh, and by the way, it can even do complex matching. I can run the Python libraries when I import all of my data, and I can do all the normalizations I want. I could all these things. And then you get everything into Databricks and you start running some reports, and lo and behold, you still see 5 Acmes. Sound familiar? Right. Because maybe the stuff that you were doing in Python wasn't multivariate. Wasn't looking across 5, 6, 7, 10 attributes of Acme for commonalities. Maybe there were no UIs within, or maybe it's not a maybe, there are none, to get stuff in front of data stewards for your top 20 customers. I would argue you don't have time to steward a lot of data. If you've got 80,000 customers, you're not going to have time to steward data for 80,000 of them, but your top 20, 50, 100, you bet. Absolutely. Absolutely, you've got time to do that. Pareto is going to apply, meaning 80% of your revenue is going to come from 20% of your customers. So do you have time, potentially, to steward some records? Notice at the beginning of this conversation, I said, you don't have time for data cleanup. That's true. You don't. However, can you clean some up? Can you at the very least say, yeah, that Acme and that Acme and that Acme are the same. Is I don't care how good your matching algorithm is. I don't care how good that Python library is. I don't care how good, you know, the fuzziness is of your fuzzy matching, how amazing it is. If your source data is suspect, if you're lacking fields, if you're lacking attributes on those Acme records, and there's still transactions associated to them, Acme is an active customer, an active supplier, and you have no address on that. I was just talking to a client yesterday. $1 billion business plus, $2 billion plus business that doesn't have address on their core customer data. And if that's what you're pumping into Databricks, well, good luck with that Python library, because you're not going to be able to resolve those. You will be overmatching and undermatching left, right, and center. And when you run the report, there's still going to be 5 Acmes in it. Or the Acmes that you're looking at are incorrectly matched or undermatched. Or not matched at all, because frankly, without address, you're going to be up a creek. At least on corporate records, company records. So this is my way of saying, I think MDM as a discipline is going to be critical here. There are things that you can be doing in the short term to come up with this 360-degree view. And I would argue they are absolutely positively evergreen. And once you get something stood up, once you can actually produce a report to somebody that says, I'm pretty confident this is like 90% of our footprint with Acme Incorporated, your company can act on that. It can try to find alternative suppliers to Acme. Right? It can understand what the business's impact is going to be. It can actually forecast. If Acme is operating in a country where there's a 30% tariff, that's what I need to take action as a CEO or a CFO. I know. And that's one thing. That's very different than, we're not entirely sure how much business we're doing with Acme, or it's going to take us 3 weeks to come up with that answer. And maybe you're in that situation now. If you are, we need to be thinking seriously and hard about how do we stand up one of these 360-degree views quickly that is reasonably accurate, that can be done at scale, can be done in an automated fashion without a lot of rigmarole around cleanups, changing source data, changing business processes. We don't have time for those things, my friend. So if you didn't do it at COVID, and you've been kind of, for whatever reason, you haven't been investing in coming up with these 360 views and coming up with the idea of creating some notion of a master record. If you haven't been doing it, you need to do it. You need to do it. And this may sound like I'm the MDM hammer looking for MDM nails. I understand that. I just have a hard time thinking that everything that I just talked about, right? Creating some holistic, reasonably accurate view of your relationships that matter the most, right? Your relationships from a product perspective, who's buying what, from a customer perspective, who's buying what, when, how often, right? Do you have specific business risk to individual customers who may be hit particularly hard by tariffs? That's another thing. Like maybe you are a B2B provider and you're selling stuff to manufacturing companies, right? Do you know what risk is associated to company A or company B? How much business are you doing with this other manufacturing company that just happens to source 80% of its stuff from China? If that's the case, if you don't know, then you're driving blind. So yeah, I know I'm kind of sounding like I'm selling MDM here, but again, this is evergreen. This is best practice. These are things that we need to do. And we may, in doing what I just suggested over the last 45 minutes, we may step on a few toes. We may make some errors when it comes to governance decisions. We may cut some corners when it comes to data quality. And yes, my friends, we may be required to own more of this on the IT side than we would be comfortable and otherwise owning. We may, but it's necessary. We need to move. We don't have time to engage the business. We don't have time to talk about changing our supplier onboarding processes. We don't have time to start changing our credit processes. We don't have time for all of that stuff. Will they help? Most certainly they will help. But we don't have time for that. Right now, what we need is accurate insights. That's what we need. More accurate, more confident, more consistent, more automated. These are the insights that we need. If we don't have them, we need to be talking about MDM. forget the data catalog, forget Databricks, forget all of this fancy other stuff over here. This is basic meat and potatoes, blocking and tackling data and analytics, a 360 degree view. Data catalog, not going to help you with this. Just not. So yes, I know I'm biased. Yes, I know that I'm pro MDM, but it makes sense. With that, my friends, I hope you've gotten value out of this. Gotten, is that a word? We like semantics, do we not? I think gotten is a word. I'm going with it today. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm going to give myself a pass on gotten. I hope you have received some valuable insights here. Hey, take a minute to subscribe. Take a minute to give it a thumbs up on the content. Would love it. We do this every 2 weeks, as I mentioned at the top. We haven't missed a two-week span yet. I am here to help. My mission is to extend the tenure of chief data officers and to help others who want to be a CDO to become one. My job is to make your job as a data and analytics leader easier. And I hope that's exactly what I'm doing. We will see you on another episode of the CDO Matters, and we'll hear from you, or you will hear from me on another episode of CDO Matters sometime soon. Thanks all. Bye for now.